duty Troy police officer named Daniel Purcell taunted and then shot to death a gay man who was coming home from the gay bars in Albany. Purcell and his friends started taunting them and shouting nigger and faggot at them. Purcell pursued them the wrong way down the one-way street in a car and pulled a gun, and Purcell shot him in the stomach and killed him. And the initial reports were that this was a good shooting, that that an off-duty cop had been attacked by this vicious gay man.
Gay life was underground. It was, you know, the bars. I understand some people went to the park, Shangri-La. There were undercover police cars sitting around and guys writing down, I assume they were writing down license plates. And the bar too itself, the Shangri-La, was a very odd kind of place. It was barbed wire. It was an entrance, sort of a caged-in area that where you walk through, and it had barbed wire on the top, and there was cages on all the windows. They were always present. You could always sense them around, even the bars. They were always sitting around in cars off in the distance. If you didn't see them right away, they were around. Most of the time it was undercover guys, but sometimes the marked, you know, the regular police cars were around. So I always felt like they could come in at any time. There were rumors that they had raided some of the bars on a periodic basis. Some of the transgender people had it much worse. And I saw a couple of them roughed up once. One guy told me they would take him down to the station and beat him up and stuff, and then force him to give him blowjobs or something like that. It was just really, they were all present. The machine was there, and you could sense it, and you could feel it.
19 police officers and a police dog arrested 20 men for alleged lewd activities. Of course, it was a private establishment. There was no public lewdness. It was private, consensual sexual behavior, which was perfectly legal. The newspapers editorialized against what happened. The TV stations seemed to highlight how absurd the whole raid was. The men in the bathhouse had been photographed naked by the police, or with towels on by the police. A horrible invasion of privacy.
The years of harassment, entrapment, and discrimination that Albany's gay men and lesbians endured culminated with an ordinance passed on December 7, 1992. The ordinance provided protection for the city's gay and lesbian population from discrimination in the areas of housing and employment. While it was an important legislative victory for the gay and lesbian community of Albany, the battle over this ordinance had far-reaching implications for the longest-running machine city in America's history. Who initiated this legislation, and how did it change the shape of politics in Albany? In March of 1987, Nancy Burton, who 10 years earlier had won her seat by 4 votes as an independent Democrat, introduced the ordinance which would provide protection for Albany's gays and lesbians against discrimination in the areas of housing and employment.
It was actually kind of a no-brainer, to be really honest with you. In 1977, when I ran the first time, I met with the Gay Political Caucus, and we talked then, in 1977, about a gay rights ordinance. And I'd love to. I mean, I don't have any qualms at all about introducing a piece at that point. The problem is that if I introduced it, it would be the kiss of death. So by 85, there was a mature gay community. A gay community that was maturing politically. A gay rights ordinance was certainly always part of the discussion during the 85 race.
Nancy Burton goes on to talk about the influence of the late Jim Perry.
It was either late in 85, early 86, or late in 86 and early 87, I don't remember now which it was, in which he basically said, you know, it's now time that, you know, we the community think that it's the right time to introduce this. We have people organized and ready to go forward with this. Rich Redlow is drafting the legislation, and we're all ready to go. And I said, fine. I mean, he in his very quiet way, he pushed me. I wasn't reluctant to introduce it in the larger scheme of things. But he was very quiet and very insistent, and very appropriately insistent, I must say. And we went from there within a very short period of time to legislation that was highly controversial, but nonetheless it was appropriate. He didn't take much talk, you know, for me to realize that he was right, that it was the right time to do this.
Sheila Healy, who was actively involved in both Albany city politics and a leader in Albany's gay and lesbian community, talked about Nancy Burton and the introduction of this legislation.
Nancy is an extraordinary person. to have run against the machine and been subjected, and it was difficult in those years. It was very, very difficult, and they made it extraordinarily difficult. To have that kind of courage is amazing. She was exactly the person that we needed. And, not but an and, she also needed constant nudging by Jim. Because this was difficult. She was just trying to survive the machine. And then we put gay rights on her plate and said, okay, we helped you get there. This is the appropriate thing to do. We got to ask you, you got to do this. And it was Jim every night. He was nudge, nudge, nudge. Sometimes it would almost be a threat. And that's not in a critical way, because it just spoke to, here's this person that is on a very vulnerable kind of position. And she did the right thing. She absolutely did the right thing.
Richard Redlow talks about drafting the legislation.
I drafted the ordinance. Remember that at the time we had no power. We had one person on the city council who was an insurgent. And so we talked Nancy into, because Nancy was reluctant to introduce a gay rights ordinance. Mm-hmm. She thought it wouldn't be healthy to introduce it and get a vote or two and have failed that miserably. And we said, let's just do it. Let's go ahead with it, because if it fails, it's a starting point. We can go from here. We can, have the enemies highlighted. Let's get the nastiness over with. Let's get the homophobic statements. Let's show the public how unreasonable they are. Let's do it. Sure, well, it's not going to happen, this time, but that's okay. We also decided that we would not create any issue that could be used against us other than the rights of gays and lesbians, and whether we had the right to those rights, if you will. In other words, we would not create anything expensive. We would not create a bureaucracy. We would not give the opposition any other argument. This had to be just about gay rights and nothing else. We drafted an ordinance that just amended existing language in the city charter, created no enforcement mechanism, created no staffing, created no remedy, particularly. It amended the statement of policy of the city. Most of this had to do with how the city itself would act. Really didn't do much. So here's this very milquetoast, lukewarm, does almost nothing but add sexual orientation ordinance, and this virulent opposition from these people who Erastus Corning had handpicked to serve on the city council.
Former Mayor Whalen recalls conversations with Nancy Burton about the ordinance.
I said to Nancy, "Nancy, there's no way you're going to get this through. Forget it for now. Resurrect it, sometime." Yeah, and then there were other pressures, not so much from the general community, but from the religious community, religious leaders that were concerned that this would lead to the introduction of other ordinances relating to gay marriages and adoptions and things that they still felt threatened about.
Burton introduced the legislation on March 16, 1987. President Pro Tem Joe Bix set up a committee to investigate the need for an ordinance protecting gay and lesbian rights.
This would have been a very typical Joe Bix decision. He would have, first of all, he didn't want to have any part of deciding or having a voice in how a committee would decide on this issue. There would never be an opportunity for me to have any sort of influence on it. He probably struggled a great deal with the need to balance the council's conservatism with the need he felt to show that the council was at least legitimately considering the issue. So, as I recall, he didn't necessarily stack the committee with the Tom Birches of the world. He, in fact, gave it to Lenny Fox, who was a real easygoing kind of guy. The point of it would be to de-escalate some of the potential I don't want to say violence, but verbal stuff that could have potentially taken place.
Carol Reichert, one of the primary community organizers, talked about the hearings and the aldermen on the council.
Jim and I called it the Fags Are Folks campaign. And, it was, we are not so different from you, and would answer any. They were uninformed. Do you see, good news was they were unformed. The bad news is they were uninformed. So we thought that we could form, you know, help them to form a concept that would be a more positive concept.
I think that it was a foregone conclusion when the measure was introduced that it was going to fail. Mm-hmm. I don't think that any of us went into this with any rose-colored glasses that any other outcome was likely. However, we understood the power of the media coverage of this over the course of a year. And the council, as the city's representative and elected body, had an obligation to at least not take the measure and vote it down without comment. So even though everybody knew what the outcome was likely to be, the council still had an obligation to genuinely hear it, mm-hmm. Whether or not they paid attention to that hearing. So, I mean, this was pretty typical behavior for the council, although this was a very unusual item for them to be considering.
We knew we'd get killed. We knew it. And yet we did it. Because we had to start getting people on the record. We had to start understanding how to use grassroots electoral politics by identifying our enemies. They wanted us to continue to be discriminated against. They wanted us to continue to be harassed and have violence committed against us. So we had to know who they were and vote them out of office. The only way to do that was to make them take a stand, make them vote. But also, we had to go through the debate. We had to have the vilification. You don't get this easily. You need the issues aired, and that's what we decided to do here.
The Human Rights Committee Joe Bix formed held three public hearings on the issue over a period of a year. The committee reported that approximately 150 to 175 individuals attended each of the meetings. The committee's report indicated that speakers and attendees were overwhelmingly in support of the ordinance, although opponents contacted council members and appeared at the later hearings, citing moral, religious, and medical reasons for their opposition. Ultimately, the committee recommended the defeat of the ordinance.
The ultimate reason was that it wasn't necessary, that there was no discrimination, that gays and lesbians had to pass this impossibly high test of discrimination. And though item after item after item was brought up at these hearings, it still wasn't, you know, didn't top the bar. Since no documentation was provided, then therefore we don't need this legislation. And so why alienate half the citizenry of the city by passing this legislation?
My vague recollection is that I said to Nancy, I do not see the need for this amendment, that there is not any demonstrable evidence to show that gays and lesbians are being discriminated against. And that was my initial position, that there's nothing here that would indicate that it's needed.
The vote was taken a year after the legislation had been introduced, on March 7th, 1988. The measure was defeated by a 12-2 vote, with one abstention. The president declared the ordinance duly defeated. Following the vote, the gay and lesbian community continued to organize, making its presence known and strategizing for future legislative success.
The abstention, and this is very important. The abstention was Arthur Scott from the Mansion neighborhood and the South End. Arthur Scott was this really sweet man, African-American. We approached Arthur numerous times, and he understood exactly what we were talking about, and this man was not a bigot. He really was not a bigot. And we said, look, your neighborhood calls upon you to pass this. And we had community forums. We actually had almost unanimity among the people who came forward just to hear what this was all about. And communicated to Arthur Scott, this ward wants gay rights, damn it. And perhaps more so than the Sixth Ward. This is it. This is the hotbed of progressive thought in the city of Albany, and you have to vote in favor of it. And the man was pained because he owed not just this position in the city council, but also his employment at the state capitol to Erastus Corning and to whoever the power brokers were, and it pained him. So he abstained, and he thought by doing that he would appease us, and we told him he had not.
The various city council people that we encouraged to be on our side, we organized a lot. I think it was Carol's idea is to get people, gay people, in the various city council districts to go to the home of the city council people and literally have in-district meetings. And it was the first time that many of these city council people ever knew that there was a gay person in their neighborhood. And it blew some of them away. It really did. So as we began to come out, meaning to go to the houses or invite him or her, it was him mostly, to the houses, and they began to see that this is an organized community, the opinions began to change, and those folk that we, whose opinions didn't change, we organized campaigns to unseat. So it was literally a very, very direct campaign with their own generals and strategists, and we literally said to anybody, if you're not with us, we will unseat you. And they'd say, oh, that's not possible, but we literally did that. We worked together in these kind of coalitions. And that's how we made our strides.
We had too many people who were sitting in these closet comfort clubs. We had to make them uncomfortable. We had to make our own community uncomfortable. And we did. People had these great jobs and had these great friends and had these great parties. Sure, maybe someone would know that they were gay, but they weren't going to use the word to define themselves and describe themselves. And lesbian, never heard the word lesbian, you know, that wasn't there. And guess what? The word gay and lesbian was on the front page of the newspapers and was on TV every night, and that made everyone uncomfortable. And when you heard the Tom Birches of the world, you know, say God created Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve, and all those other, you know, real creative things. it shook people out of their you know, comfortable worlds and made them come forward. I remember people started coming out more to their friends, to their families. People started writing checks. Those $100 checks were from a lot of mad, angry people.
Susan Russell, one of the members of the core group of individuals responsible for organizing the community around the ordinance, recalls her words to the disappointed crowd on the front steps of City Hall following the defeat of the first ordinance.
What the people who oppose this must realize is that we have already won. It is only a matter of time before this will come to pass in the city of Albany. I was absolutely convinced of that. But what we have done is to stop being seen as an isolated group. And we have now more and more been able to reach out to all these other organizations and all these other people who now see us as a part of them. And this is something that the people on the other side will not be able to take back. And so, really, we have already won.
The community made their first significant strides in the fall of 1989 in the primary election when three machine-backed candidates were unseated and replaced by independent, gay-supported, and supporting Democrats. The unseated included the homophobic 20-year incumbent Tom Birch. The winners were backed by a progressive coalition led by the Eleanor Roosevelt Democratic Club. The club, a gay and lesbian democratic organization, was identified in the media as a force to be reckoned with. Significantly, the introduction of the gay rights legislation changed the face of Albany politics. The ordinance and its subsequent defeat mobilized a group of individuals disenfranchised from politics and government.
My willingness to introduce that legislation translated into dramatic changes in the council in 1989 because the people who were so offensive in how they dealt with the issue were booted out. And even though I wasn't there to take office in 1989, that their behavior in relation to this issue is what really did them in. And if I hadn't started it then, some of them would still be in the council, I think, right now. It was the right thing to do at the right time, even if it didn't ultimately win then. It created a sea change in the acceptability of that issue, even if it did lose that year, so that when it was considered, I guess, the third time, ultimately there was victory.
Nancy was obviously the advocate. Nancy was a maverick, and there were a lot of instances where I thought she should have voted differently when she didn't. But we could sit down and talk about issues, and this was one of them.
Nancy Burton really started this whole thing for all of us. She was the sole dissenter. She was the only insurgent on the city council for so long. She introduced the first gay rights ordinance. She's the one who got the death threats. She's a hero. She's an absolute hero.
525,600 minutes. How do you measure a year? In daylights, in sunsets, in midnights, in cups of coffee, in inches, in miles, in laughter, in strife. In 525,600 minutes, how do you measure a year in the life?